I'm going to say the prayer now so that we can start the teaching. Okay, Father, I thank you for this Shabbat, and I thank you for your word and how you are teaching us to keep your ordinances, your judgments, and your statutes, and follow in the steps of Yeshua, and to learn to be more like Abraham, who also kept your judgments, your ordinances, and statutes. And I pray, Father, that anything that I might say that might be not from you, Father, that it would just fall by the wayside and dry up and not bring forth any fruit, and that I would be corrected. And Father, I pray that all of your words, whatever is from you, every word, as a seed would flourish and bring forth fruit. And I ask this in Yeshua's name. Okay, I titled this one, Akare Mot 2022, A Calf and Two Goats. Yom Kippur has become a perverted feast in the hands of religion. Judaism changed it. Christianity ignores it. And Islam doesn't even know about it. Kingdom citizens, though, are required to know and do what Yahweh said about it, and to stick with only that, only what He said. We cannot now perform the ritual sacrifices, but we must have a heart that wants to do as much as we can to obey, rather than one that seeks to interpret the law to find out what we can get away with not doing. So now let's look at Yom Kippur. Leviticus 16:1. And Yahweh spoke to Moses after the two sons of Aaron died in bringing strange fire before Yahweh, so they died. Leviticus 16 is said by the rabbis to be out of chronological order. And they say this because they do not see what Yahweh wants them to see. After the Nadav and Abihu incident, Yahweh's next most immediate concern had been the people. You know, how to keep them from being afraid to approach him after he killed Nadav and Abihu. Immediately then, Yahweh gave the laws of clean and unclean to show the Israelites he had a plan for how they could approach him and not die. And that's why he gave those laws of clean and unclean, we find them in chapters 11 through 15, on the same day as Nadav and Abihu's deaths. So, chapter 16 is not out of order. It appears that Yahweh did not give further instructions to Aaron about the Day of Atonement on the same day that Nadav and Abihu died. Rather, he waited, and that is why the account says Yahweh spoke to Moses and the two remaining sons after the Nadav and Abihu incident. I don't know if it was the next day or within however many few days, but it would have been very close to that incident. Now, though, Yahweh is returning to instruct Aaron on what will get him and his sons killed if they approach him the wrong way, on the wrong day, and so forth. And it is no accident that the instructions on Yom Kippur are given right after the deaths of Nadav and Abihu, because they were trying to overthrow Yahweh entirely in order to reinstitute Egypt's religions on the day that Yahweh was trying to atone for the golden calf for the congregation. You know, Aaron and his sons had been atoned for in their week-long ceremony that was supposed to have been an ordination. It turned out to be also about their atonement, and I've talked about that in previous teachings. But on the eighth day, Yahweh was atoning then for the golden calf. And that was interrupted by Nadab and Abihu, and that got them killed, and it also did not complete the atonement. So Yom Kippur was added as a temporary atonement that had to be renewed annually until the permanent atonement, Yeshua, would come. Nonetheless, we do continue doing Yom Kippur. People have gotten confused about the absence of Yom Kippur in Ezekiel, but Leviticus 16:33 says it's a statute forever. So we can have that discussion about Ezekiel another time. But today I want to just stick with Yom Kippur in the Torah. Leviticus 16:3 says, Aaron shall enter into the holy place. Stop. It says that in the King James Plus, it says, thus shall Aaron come into the holy. This is not saying that Aaron is to bring his calf inside the holy HaKodesh. If we go to, let me go back to Leviticus 16:3. It says, he shall come into the sanctuary with a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. No, we're going to stop. Aaron shall come into the sanctuary. Stop. And let's take a look at what it really says there. It's important. The English word place is italicized in the King James, which means it is added to make a distinction to the two areas inside the sanctuary. Inside the sanctuary are the holy HaKodesh and the most holy in English, which is Kodesh Kodeshim. HaKodesh and Kodesh Kodeshim. Those are the Hebrew words. The reason the word into appears in the King James Version in verse 3 is because that is an Old English word, but actually in the Hebrew it is the word El. Now El is sometimes rendered as God in Strong's H410. However, this is El, H413, and it has a directional meaning of toward. So then I went and I looked at several versions, the Web, ISV, ESV, and NET versions, and they all say the same thing as the King James. Aaron is to enter into the holy place or holy sanctuary with the calf. The Septuagint Greek also says Aaron is to bring the calf into the holy place. But this is absurd. No animals ever were permitted inside the interior of the Mikdash, the separated area that contained the HaKodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim, the holy, also known as the holy place, and the Holy of Holies. So I went to the interlinear from the Masoretic Scroll, and here is what the scroll says word by word, and I'm going to read it first in Hebrew and then in English. Bezot bo Ahoron el HaKodesh par ben bakar lakata ayil la'ula. Therefore, come Aaron toward the holy, calf young beev for sin, ram for burnt. Well, that makes no sense in English. Often there are no prepositions or conjunctions in Hebrew, so these have to be added when translating into English. So let me add the directions from El and the preposition with and the conjunction and. And let's see if we can get a better reading on verse 3. Therefore, come Aaron toward the holy with calf, young beeve, for sin, ram, and for burnt. Now, notice there that I put in the word toward. Come Aaron toward the holy. Therefore, let's do this again. Therefore, Aaron shall come toward the holy with the young beef animal for sin and the ram for the burnt offering. So what is happening here? This is directional. He comes in through the entrance gate, and there is a brazen altar between that gate and the entrance into the holy place. But he's bringing it toward the holy place because there's going to be a special ceremony that's going to happen inside the HaKodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim. So we have to add many English words for the sentence to make sense, but we can finally get there. And I have 2 points about this. The first is that while translators say they look at the scrolls for their sources, they really are usually just following the King James Version with its mistakes. And second, most Christian leaders do not understand the what and why of the Torah. You know, they have no interest in it because they teach that the Torah just doesn't apply to them. And when they do teach it, they do so in the Judaism context, which says this is for the Jews only. However, this is important because we need to understand what Yahweh is doing here. No animal ever entered into the holy Kodesh or the most holy Kodesh Kodeshim. All kinds of misunderstandings and perversions of the Torah come from Christianity and Judaism, and they each have their own perversions for Yom Kippur, and especially for Judaism, I'll share, how they have changed Yom Kippur. I'll tell you about that later on. Another point is that the entire tabernacle, including the outer court, is holy. So, all around, the English rendering in most translations is problematic. Now, continuing on, Aaron shall enter the tabernacle compound, moving toward the holy place, toward it, with a young bullock, a calf, for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering. Now, the calf is our clue about why Yahweh added Yom Kippur to the law, and I'm going to go over why later on I believe that it was added. But can anyone say golden calf? This is a calf for a reason. In verse 4, he dons his high priestly linen garments, and then he goes to get 2 goats for a sin offering and 1 ram for the congregation, as instructed in verse 5. And actually, one of those goats is not a sin offering. And so now Aaron has 2 rams to offer for a burnt offering, 1 for himself and 1 for the congregation. He has his own calf, and then there are 2 goats. One is for a sin offering for the congregation, and the other one is not. So there will be now 2 sin offering ceremonies, one for the line of Aaron, and one for the congregation. So Aaron makes his atonement in verses 6 and 11, which both say the calf is for Aaron and his house. In verse 6, Aaron shall offer his bullock for the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house. Leviticus 16:11. And Aaron shall bring the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself, and shall make an atonement for himself and for his house, and shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. And then in verses 7 through 10 is the ceremony of the two goats. And here's where it starts to get really interesting, to me anyway. Here is what the scroll says about them. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, one lot for Yahweh, and the other lot for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goat upon which Yahweh's lot fell, and offer him for a sin offering. So now I'm going to take exception with the English rendering of these verses 16:8 and 16:9. Verse 8 does not say in the Hebrew, as it does in the English, for the Lord or for Yahweh. The scroll literally says one lot Yahweh, one lot scapegoat. The lot Yahweh is the one that was killed for the sins of the people and to cleanse the tabernacle / temple. This is Yahweh telling his people every year for 3,500 years forward that he himself will be offered as a sacrifice for their golden calf sin. Verse 10, but the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before Yahweh to make an atonement with him and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. So now we have two goats. And in this ceremony, each one receives a name. They're not goats anymore. They have names now. And the one goat is called Yahweh. The other goat is called Azazel, or scapegoat. And scapegoat is better rendered as escaping goat. The word Azazel is not a reference to a fallen angel. It is a compound Hebrew word that only appears four times in the Tanakh, and all are in Leviticus 16. The escaping goat remains alive while the goat named Yahweh dies to atone for the escaping goat. So Azazel, as a compound Hebrew word, comes from Az, or Az, which is Strong's H5795, and Azal, which is Strong's H235. And Az, or Az, is a she-goat. Azal means to disappear, fail, gad about, go to and fro. Azal represents Yahweh's people's character. They are the congregation that has disappeared from righteousness, and they're a failure who continues to gad about going to and fro to see what kind of trouble they can get into, as goats are wont to do. Or here's possibly another viewpoint of that. Perhaps Yahweh was prophesying that the congregation would disappear and gad about and go to and fro, getting into trouble. The compound word Azazel is no longer feminine. Once it became a compound word, it became masculine. But let's not completely dismiss its original feminineness. or its femininity in the word as or as, because I believe this is a clue to the kind of woman that Yahweh married. So he brings two male goats, because Azazel is masculine, so Aaron brings two male goats. And it has been said that these two goats represent the numerous pairs of twins in Scripture, which always seem to depict some kind of trouble between the twins. Some reference this as a prophecy of another set of twins that will be coming in the future, namely the two houses of Judah and Israel. Aaron's calf sacrifice is a forced annual admission of guilt on his part for leading the congregation into national rebellion against their king. His successor high priests take that guilt on themselves from generation to generation. So at this point, Aaron will take coals from the brazen altar into his censer. And I want you to keep hold on this phrase, before Yahweh, because this phrase means the brazen altar, but it also references the altar of incense. And so the high priest put the handle of his censer under his armpit, according to the Talmud, and when he gets his hands, and then he gets his hands full of incense. He has two handfuls of incense. So his hands are cupped together, and someone has put two handfuls of incense in his hands. He then carried the censer and the incense behind the veil going into the Holy of Holies. And the Talmud says in the days of the first temple, he maneuvered the shovel between the poles of the Ark of the Covenant. And he had to be careful not to drop that hot embers from his censer doing that. And in the days of the second temple, of course, there was no ark. And so he put the censer or the shovel where the ark would have been. Then the incense was put on the coals inside the censer. That made the room fill with smoke. Well, it is not clear if from Leviticus 16, verses 12 to 14, if Aaron also had the bull's blood with him, or if, according to the Talmud, he left the room to go get the bull's blood. Either way, he then sprinkled the bull's blood seven times on the mercy seat in verse 14. And then he left there to go kill the goat whose name is Yahweh. I just love that this goat is called Yahweh, because it proves that Yeshua is Yahweh. He then brings its blood into the Holy of Holies and sprinkles its blood seven times on the mercy seat while the room is still filled with incense smoke. So now, let's stop here and talk a little bit about the goat named Yahweh and the Son of God named Yahweh. And let's ask ourselves, who arranged for both to be killed? Who is it, in the instance of the Yahweh goat and the Son of God, who arranged for those to be killed? The high priest. The high priest did it at Yom Kippur, and the high priest did it at Passover in Matthew 26, verses 57 to 68. Now you can see, because I've said in my teachings before, that Yeshua also fulfilled Yom Kippur, and he did that at Passover. So he is our Passover lamb, and he is this goat named Yahweh. Both were killed by the high priest. So I think I've made that point. Now I'm going to move on. The goat named Yahweh was sacrificed for the purpose of, according to Leviticus 16:16, making an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel and because of their transgressions and all their sins, and so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remains amongst them in the midst of their uncleanness. Here's what Yeshua's sacrifice does. His sacrifice washes Israel's sins away in his blood, Revelation 1:5. And he atoned for the uncleanness of the tabernacle and the heavenly temple, which was perpetually unclean throughout the year, in Hebrews 9:19-28. In Hebrews 10:12, it says, "But this man, Yeshua, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God." And this is what he was atoning for here, not only the golden calf, but also taking on himself all of our sins. Leviticus 16:17 says that no one was to go inside with him to do this part of the ceremony. After the blood was sprinkled 7 times with the bull's blood and 7 times with the goat's blood, Aaron needed to make atonement for the altar of incense and the brazen altar. Leviticus 16:18 says, "And he shall go out to the altar that is," remember the phrase, "before the Lord." So I'm going to stop there. Putting the blood on the altar of incense, this is the only time any blood is put on the altar of incense, except for if there were sins of ignorance committed in Leviticus 4:7, in which the priest had sinned. And in Leviticus 4:7, it says, "And the priest shall put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before the Lord." So that's why I wanted you to remember that phrase, "before the Lord," because that is inside the tabernacle of the congregation, and putting that blood on there makes an atonement for it. And Aaron certainly did sin. His sin defiled both the incense and brazen altars that he was in charge of. So these must be cleansed. And so now let's continue with Leviticus 16:18. And it says, "And he shall take of the blood of the bullock and of the blood of the goat and put it upon the horns of the altar round about." Now, if we go back to Leviticus 4:7 and finish up that verse, after the altar of incense is atoned for, he pours all the blood of the bullock at the bottom of the altar of the burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And again, all of this has to do with when the priest sins. So Leviticus 16:18 and 4:7 describe the same kind of ritual: blood on the altar of incense and on the brazen altar. Now, I earlier said that Yahweh did not give a Yom Kippur feast in the instructions that he gave to Moses before the golden calf incident. He had only said there would be a special ceremony to atone for the incense altar. And that comes to us in Exodus 30:10. "And Aaron shall make an atonement upon the horns of it once in a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonements. Once in the year shall he make atonement upon it throughout your generations. It is most holy to Yahweh." But the change in the law that happened with the golden calf added more rituals that for that day of atonement, which was called Yom Kippur, which was for the altar of incense. The description in Exodus 30, verse 10, is just the atonement on the altar of incense's horns once a year. It doesn't say anything about the goats or going into the Holy of Holies and all of that. So now Aaron is now at the point in verse 19 that he has to go to the brazen altar, and he shall sprinkle of the blood upon it, the brazen altar, with his finger seven times, and cleanse it and hallow it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel. And when he has finished that, he brings the living goat. He puts his hands on its head and confesses the sins of the congregation into it, and sends it with a fit man, or a man that's, you know, been chosen to do this, to take this goat into the wilderness. This is in verses 20 to 22, so that this escaping goat can escape death. Now in verse 23, he changes his garments and prepares to do another sin offering with the ram which he brought, and the ram which the congregation brought, and that's found in verses 24 and 25. The man who touched the goat that gets released into the wilderness, Azazel, he's now unclean, and he needs to take a mikveh in verse 26. And the skin, guts, and dung have to be removed, that were removed from the calf, and they're now waiting to be taken outside the camp and burned in verse 27. And in verse 28, the man who does this procedure also is unclean and must mikveh. And there's, you know, some of this, you know, we can see in the story of Yeshua with the men that dealt with his body and so forth, but I didn't put that in here. I didn't want to make it too long. Verses 29 to 32 explains that Yom Kippur is not optional for Yahweh's people. Yahweh repeats its purpose then in verse 33. He says, "And he shall make an atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of the congregation and for the altar, and he shall make an atonement for the priests and for all the people of the congregation." And then verse 34 says, "This is an everlasting statute to you, to make an atonement for the children of Israel for all their sins once a year." And he did as Yahweh commanded Moses. So now let's talk about how Judaism did Yom Kippur in the first and second temple periods. Because what the Jews did and what the Torah said and how they've changed the Yom Kippur service, along with all the other things they've changed, are important. And I want to teach this for those who are possibly listening, who are thinking about converting to Judaism and thinking Judaism is the way to go, you know, the right religion, and that it's more correct than Yahweh's express Torah instructions. And as a reminder, I will repeat that religion and Yahweh's kingdom are two different things. They don't mix, ever. So in Judaism, for Yom Kippur, actually it's for the every day, the daily, morning, and afternoon lamb ceremonies, the high priest wore golden garments, and he wore these golden garments also on Yom Kippur. The golden garments were implemented in Judaism, and they continued on Yom Kippur, but nowhere in Scripture do we find any mention of golden garments for the high priest. Also, the number of times the bull's blood is sprinkled on the mercy seat and the brazen altar and altar of incense in Judaism was 8 times instead of 7. Now, they left the goat's blood being sprinkled 7 times. but they changed the bull's blood being sprinkled to 8 times. I'm just going to put this in here. I think the Jews have not understood that sprinkling the blood of the bull 8 times is a hidden or misunderstood reference to the 8th day ceremony on which Nadab and Abihu approached Yahweh in the wrong manner. Or perhaps they do understand but think it's okay because the rabbis say they make the decrees and God obeys. Thus, you know, it's okay that they changed his Yom Kippur ceremony. Judaism also changed what happened to the Azazel, the escaping goat. Rather than simply letting it go in the wilderness, they began to push it off a cliff. When this ritual changed is not easy to find, and I don't know when this began. It was probably sometime in the late Second Temple period. And I say this because you must remember earlier that I pointed out that the Septuagint said that Aaron was supposed to bring the calf into, meaning inside, the HaKodesh, the holy place, right? You remember that? Well, the Septuagint began to be translated by the rabbis in the 3rd century B.C. So this tells us that over 200 years before Yeshua came, the Jews had already reinterpreted what Yahweh said 1,300 years earlier to Moses while the first Israelites were still in the wilderness. But by the time Yeshua came, strange things had begun happening, and particularly they began happening after Yeshua's death, resurrection, and ascension to heaven. My friend Rick Eldridge mentioned this to me the other day, and I told him before the meeting started that I was going to mention some of those things that he reminded me of. For instance, that there was a scarlet thread hung in the temple that turned white until after Yeshua's crucifixion. And then after his crucifixion, it didn't turn white anymore. It remained scarlet. Of course, there's nothing in the Torah about hanging a scarlet thread in the temple on Yom Kippur. The other thing, the temple gate refused to stay shut after Yom Kippur's final Nilah ceremony. And then the escaping goat began returning back to the temple every year. Legends have it that the Azazel goat kept returning to Jerusalem year by year, so the Jews began to take the goat to a cliff and push it off the cliff to kill it. Now, it's possible that this Azazel goat was doing this even before Yeshua came. I've not been able to verify that. But the Jews don't understand the symbolism of this before Yahweh. Because to Yahweh, who thinks in symbols, the Father, remember I've told you in the past, the Father uses symbolism to talk with us. And if we use a symbolism before Him, He'll know what it means. So to Yahweh, pushing this Azazel goat off the cliff represented that the goat returning represented that the house of Judah's wickedness was returning to them. And then when they pushed the goat over the cliff to kill it, they were then prophesying the death of the house of Judah, the remaining tribes of Israel at that time. Indeed, the house of Judah was cut off from their inheritance when they killed their king, who provided the covenants of citizenship and their inheritance. Jeremiah 44 is written to the Jews that escaped to Egypt rather than take their punishment in Babylon. Yahweh talks extensively about his punishment to them. Jeremiah 44:11 says that Yahweh will cut off all of Judah. In Jeremiah 44:11, even though he opens talking about those Jews that are now in Egypt, verse 44:11 says, "Therefore Yahweh of armies, the God of Israel, says, Behold, I will set my face against you for evil, even to cut off all Judah." Yahweh's punishment was not just to cut off the Jews in Egypt. He is here prophesying the cutting off of all Judah. This cutting off would come during a visitation by Yahweh to the earth. As he came to see what was happening in Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 18, he had planned his excursion to the earth again in the form of a being who is 100% man and 100% God. Isaiah speaks of the visitation to all Israel in chapter 10, verse 3. Indeed, Assyria was Yahweh's army coming to cut off and remove the house of Israel from the citizenship covenants. But the Jews also had a day of visitation from Assyria. The Jews still did not learn their lesson after that, so Yahweh sent Babylon. They still did not learn their lesson, so Yahweh sent Yeshua. When Yeshua came, it was a day of visitation. Hosea also, of the house of Israel's visitation, is given in chapter 7. And then Jeremiah and Micah both speak of the day of the Jews' visitation when they will be destroyed. Jeremiah was already in Babylon when he was writing about this. So his prophecy was not about them going into Babylonian captivity, as was Micah's prophecy. But what does the day of visitation mean, or what does it entail? Well, being cut off from the covenants that comprise citizenship in biblical Israel is what that means. Yeshua came for many reasons, one of which was to restore all 12 tribes back to covenant citizenship. Another was to bring Judah's prophesied visitation. And in fact, in Luke 19, verses 41 to 44, Yeshua wept over Jerusalem because it says in those verses that she still did not recognize the day of her visitation in which she will now come to her end. To this day, Judah does not recognize they are not in citizenship covenant with Yahweh, unless they come through his goat sacrifice, as the goat named Yahweh, Yeshua. They just simply cannot see it. The other thing that the Jews changed was who Azazel pointed to. Leviticus tells me, okay, Dawn, are you having a hard time? Is everybody having a hard time hearing me?
No.
Okay. Okay, Dawn, I'm sorry. Rick, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm gonna go on. Leviticus 16 tells us that the escaping goat, the Azazel scapegoat, is for the congregation. But the Jews began to change that view to redefining Azazel as Satan. And here is a quote from NewWorldEncyclopedia.org. The rabbis fearing contamination from polytheism, interpreted Azazel as the rugged mountain cliff from which the scapegoat was cast down on Yom Kippur. But some, such as Nachmanides, argued that Azazel belongs to the class of Seirim, goat-like demons haunting the desert, to which the Israelites were wont to offer sacrifice. And by the way, when the Jews talk about Israelites, they may not always be meaning to include themselves. You know, they may be just meaning the 10 northern tribes. Both views have been variously endorsed and debated in Jewish tradition. Viewed as a demon of the desert, Azazel seems to have been closely interwoven with the Book of Enoch as the seducer of men and women and leader of the rebellious hosts. That all comes from the Talmud in the Yoma Tractate 67b. So they were afraid of the contamination from polytheism. Well, what polytheism did the rabbis of the first century fear? Oh, the belief that arose among the followers of Yeshua that he is God, Yahweh Elohim. To this day, the Jews accuse Christians of polytheism, worshiping an idol, and they say that Yeshua is the idol. Now, Azazel, the escaping goat, wanders to and fro. That's what Azal means. And this is an activity also attributed to Satan in the book of Job. Thus, Yahweh's congregation, wandering in the world and being in exile, being cut off, does become like Satan, who is also in permanent exile without the chance to return to the kingdom through redemption. Humans are the only redeemable creatures on earth, and that's why the Lord gives us these extensive rituals for our sins to be cleansed, and then he provides his own sacrifice that's able to encompass all of these things. His name is Yeshua, and he is Yahweh. Judaism teaches that the Jews are righteous, and that they are not in exile for themselves. They were in exile for the sins of the nations. Thus, they were not represented by Azazel. Azazel cannot be representing them as a congregation because they are righteous. So therefore, Azazel must represent Satan. And I have written about this in the past, and I've got a link in here so you can go over and read the article where I got that information. So if we think about how the Jews changed Yom Kippur for a minute, we may conclude that one possible reason that they changed the Yom Kippur ceremony by introducing golden garments for the now elite and more special than everyone else high priest, and sprinkling of blood 8 times and pushing the goat over the cliff to its death, all which prophesied their own end, but that these were deliberately done to make sure the other tribes would not be included in the atonement. See, they made these ceremonies for them only by making those changes. But little did they know that all 12 tribes would get a better atonement from Yeshua on the cross, as taught in the book of Hebrews. So these changes probably began to happen in the first temple period after Jeroboam and Rehoboam split the kingdom between them. But these changes became entrenched in the second temple after they returned from Babylon. Today's Yom Kippur ceremonies are substituted by the Jews reciting the Kol Nidre, the prayer for God to forgive their past and future sins. And this also was not part of Yahweh's Yom Kippur. So now let's go on to chapter 17, sacrificing to devils. That teaches us that Yahweh's definition of sacrificing to devils is when we do not bring our sacrifices to His door. We read about that in Leviticus 17, 3 and 4. So bring your sacrifice to His door. Don't do it in your backyard or out in your meadow, and then bring the blood and put it on your doorpost at Passover and so forth. Don't do that. Yeshua is the door. The blood is already on the door. And notice in verse 4 that blood will be imputed to one who does not bring the sacrifice to Yahweh's door. That means, in addition to this being rendered a sacrifice to devils, it means the person has now committed murder. We think of murder as only having to do with human killing another human. But according to Yahweh, killing an ox, lamb, or goat for anything except eating or as a sacrifice at His door is murder, and the penalty is death. Leviticus 17, 10 through 16 tells us that consuming blood is prohibited. Whoever consumes blood is to be cut off, to be put to death. What about the wine that we drink as a symbol of Yeshua's blood? Well, it is wine, not blood. Yeshua gave us the symbol to keep us from violating the commandment, but the symbolism still connects us to the blood of Yeshua's sacrifice. Now let's talk very quickly about the sexual relations. The only family relationship that is not prohibited in Leviticus 18 is avuncular marriage. This is between uncles and nieces. A reference to an incestuous relationship between a man and his brother's daughter. Let me say that again. The incestuous relationship between a man and his brother's daughter is not mentioned in chapter 18. I'm going to explain why I'm saying this to you. Because there are people who say that Abraham and Sarah committed incest. They did not. This is an avuncular marriage, and I'm going to show that to you right now. Genesis 11, 28 and 29. And Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah. Notice that Haran, who died, was the father of Milcah and Iscah. What you may not know is that Iscah is another name for Sarai. Iscah and Sarai are the same woman. Sarai was Abraham's sister only by adoption. Terah would necessarily have had to adopt Milcah and Iscah after Haran's death. So when Abram later said Sarai was his sister, he was technically correct about it because of her adoption, but he was also permitted to marry her. In fact, Nahor married Haran's other daughter, Milcah. And Milcah is the mother of Rebekah. Both Milcah and Sarai were adopted by Terah, Nahor, and Abram's father. These were not incestuous relationships according to the Torah. Leviticus 18:9 says, "The nakedness of your sister either the daughter of your father or the daughter of your mother, making her a half-biological sister, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness you shall not uncover. And in verse 11 it says, the nakedness of your father's wife's daughter, begotten of your father, she is your stepsister. So like if he's, you know, he had a family and then there's another woman and they now have a daughter, she is, or even if she comes in with a daughter of her own, that's what it is, that she comes in with a daughter of her own, she's your stepsister. You shall not uncover her nakedness. But Sarai was not the daughter of Terah's wife. So now let's look at Leviticus 18:12, because there is a problem there with two important characters of the Exodus account. Actually, three important characters, but two of them are named. It says, you shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's sister, your biological aunt. She is your father's near kinswoman. Well, this was done by Amram and Jochebed. In Exodus 6:20, it said, Amram took Jochebed, his father's sister, his near kinswoman, to wife. These people are the parents of Aaron, Miriam, and Moses. Because it says there in verse 20 that she, Jochebed, bore him, Amram, Aaron, and Moses. So at that time, the sins of Egypt were in the Israelites. Leviticus 18:3 says, after the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do. Neither shall you walk in their ordinances. Well, the Israelites have walked in the ordinances of both nations since that time. They're still walking in those ordinances because their Jewish, Christian, and Muslim doctrines have pieces and parts of Egypt and Canaan to this day. The Jewish Kabbalah is full of Egyptian mysteries. Christianity includes images in worship, even in the Protestant churches where they hang crucifixes and other art. Islam continues to sacrifice to devils because they have an Eid, a holiday, where they sacrifice a sheep because of Abraham binding Ishmael to kill him as a sacrifice. Now we know that's not true. It's Isaac. The twists and turns, the perversions of religion never cease. This is why we need to get to what Yahweh actually said and what he actually meant and what he actually instructed for his kingdom's citizens, and then we need to stick with that.